This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run on this gloomy Tuesday, the 22nd of November. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wang Xiaoning and Chung Jensen. Turning our attention now, though, to what's happening on the football stage on Sunday, 12 years after Qatar was awarded the rights to host the 2022 World Cup, the biggest football event finally kicked off in Doha. It's the first World Cup being held in the Middle East and is also the most expensive tournament in history.
Why? Because the Qatari government has spent $300 billion to build the necessary infrastructure to host the influx of teams and tourists. But while the initial goal may have been to bring international prestige to a Gulf nation, the role of the host has come along with unwanted scrutiny on the country's human rights practices. There are also long-standing corruption allegations hanging over the bidding process for the Games, although Qatar has consistently denied any wrongdoing.
So for the small nation of Qatar, what would be the political and economic impact of hosting this World Cup? Joining us on for a primer on the geopolitics of the World Cup is Dr. James Dorsey, Adjunct Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. James, good morning. Always good to have you. Now, this is the first time that a Middle Eastern and a Muslim country is hosting the prestigious event. How significant is this in your view?
I think it's very significant, first of all, for the Middle East and for the Muslim world. It also reflects something much more broader, which is the rebalancing of power within the international order. And that's in particularly what we're seeing for in the 21st century. So we're getting a move whereby power is being rebalanced between East and West. And that is reflected in international sports, too. The Qatar World Cup, or the fact that it is being held for the first time in the Middle East and a Muslim country, being an example of that.
And James, can you walk us through the controversy between the bidding process to host the 2022 World Cup? Why was the choice of Qatar seen as contentious?
I think there are three reasons, and there's a double edge to this. The first reason is the integrity of the bid of Qatar. There's frankly no doubt in my mind that there may have been wrongdoing in the bid. Having said that, that was the culture of FIFA, the World Soccer Governing Body. So Qatar is guilty in the sense of committing the crime, if you wish, but it did so in which that was the way business was done. So FIFA is at least equally responsible. Then there's a second set of issues, which has to do with rights, whether that's migrant worker rights, LGBTQ rights, democratic freedoms. On that score, Qatar has done a lot in terms of migrant workers. Not enough, there's no question about it, but it has done things that other countries have not done in the region. On LGBTQ rights, it's had to walk a balance between a very conservative society and what the what the international community was demanding, and it's so far been able to do so, which doesn't satisfy anyone, but allows it to move ahead without too much agitation. Then there's the third group of issues, and that really is, to put it very bluntly, bias, prejudice, bigotry, and sour grapes. So with other words, there was a lot of prejudice in some of the criticism of Qatar, and the genuine critics who had legitimate issues failed to distance themselves from that kind of rhetoric, and in some ways, therefore, weakened their positions.
James, meanwhile, Qatar is spending $300 billion to finance the World Cup. It's the most expensive in history. But on the flip side, organizers are expecting the event to only add $17 billion to the economy. Is the payoff worth the investment? What is Qatar hoping to achieve or gain?
First of all, I would be cautious with the $300 billion figure. Included in that figure is infrastructure like Doha Airport, like the metro system, that was going to be built anyways. So whether that's really a World Cup-related expense, I think is questionable. On the broader issue, this is not about economics. This is about defense strategy. keep in mind that Qatar is a country of 300,000 people sandwiched between two regional behemoths, Iran and Saudi Arabia, both of which are on the one hand partners, but on the other hand, potential threats. Qatar can buy whatever sophisticated weaponry in whatever quantities it wants. It will never be able to defend itself in a conventional war. And therefore, it needs to rely on the international community to step in if there were an emergency similar to what happened in 1990 when the Iraqis invaded Kuwait and the rest of the world liberated Kuwait. And for that, you need soft power.
Hmm. So it is.
This is one point. One form of soft power.
I get it. It's a way to build that international presence of visibility so that the world does know where to find Qatar and where it is if something were to go wrong. I do want to ask about the regional political dynamics. It wasn't too long ago that Qatar was shunned by its Gulf neighbors. I think the blockade on Qatar was only lifted in 2021. What kind of impact does Qatar hosting the World Cup have then on regional political dynamics?
I think you've got to differentiate between the Qatar's various detractors. What you're seeing since the boycott was lifted, that the Saudis are actually tightening relations with Qatar. You saw last night that, on Sunday night when the World Cup opened, that the Saudi Crown Prince was in the stadium watching the opening match. It's a different ball game with the United Arab Emirates. Mm. What the Gulf states have done is they've tried to exploit economically or commercially at the very last minute the World Cup by offering accommodation, additional flights, so people could stay, for example, in Dubai at cheaper rates and easier to find accommodation and fly into Doha just for the match and fly back.
And James, I'd just like to get some updates on the situation in Iran. And when the match between England and Iran was played, we saw the Iran team remain silent when the national anthem was played as a sign of protest. What have been the consequences of the ongoing anti-government protests? How do you see it playing out?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens when the Iranian national team returns to Iran, whether or not they are going to be penalized for their statement in support of the protests. More broadly, this is the most serious crisis that the regime in Tehran has confronted in terms of popular protest since 1979 and the Islamic Revolution. The protesters clearly have been able to sustain the protests now for more than 2 months, despite a very brutal crackdown. The question really is that whether or not they would be capable of forcing either regime change, with other words, toppling the government, at least forcing it to change policies. And that, I think, is a more difficult proposition, because to achieve that, you would need to see a serious crack in the regime, with part of the regime saying, we need a compromise. And while there are individual figures saying that within the regime, there is not really a crack, at least not yet.
Okay, James, very quickly tell us, who do you hope will win the World Cup?
I'm neutral on this. I do politics of sport. I'm not a soccer fan.
James, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Dr. James Dorsey, adjunct senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. And in the conversation, mentioning that he does not support any particular team. He's neutral. He's more interested in the politics of it all. 7:46 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to be discussing whether we can, Malaysia's electoral map be redrawn. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.